Welcome to the People and Projects Podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com. Hi, this is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence Development Corporate. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the People and Projects Podcast. And what comes to mind when you think of the term risk? In our workshops and keynotes regarding project management, the topic of risk inevitably gets talked about. And in those discussions, it's clear that one's views and attitudes about risk significantly impacts how a project gets managed. Now, a problem with risk is when we lose perspective on it. For example, I won't get out of bed today because something bad could happen. But then there's the flip side as well, where we leap from the platform exclaiming, I hope the bungee cord's attached. Well, whether at work or in life, there are endless number of things that we could worry about. And I know plenty of leaders that admit they're really good worriers. And it's been said that one of the best antidotes for anxiety is action, and a way to move your team and project from worrying to action is risk management. Well, to talk about this issue, I went to one of the clearest and most prolific voices on the topic, Dr. David Hilson. And I've split my discussion with David into two episodes and look forward to sharing the first portion with you today. Enjoy. Dr. David Hilson has an international reputation as a leading thinker and practitioner in strategic risk management. Known worldwide as the Risk Doctor, David has a strong and unique track record in the diagnosis, prognosis, and treatment of uncertainty, both its threats to business health and its opportunities for business growth. Dr. Hilson is director of Risk Doctor and Partners, offering strategic and tactical risk management advice and support to major organizations in a wide array of industries around the world. He is a PMI Fellow and received the PMI Distinguished Contribution Award. David is also a fellow of the UK Institute of Risk Management and an honorary fellow of the UK Association for Project Management. He's the author of 8 books on risk, including his most recent entitled Exploiting Future Uncertainty. For all of this and much more, David is recently honored as the risk industry's Risk Personality of the Year, an award reserved for an individual who has made the biggest contribution in the field as recognized by his peers. Dave joins us today from his home in the UK. David, congratulations on that risk award, and thank you for joining us for the People and Projects Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. It's great to be here, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to share some ideas with you and with our listeners.
I'll never forget the first time I saw the PMI's definition of risk, which includes this idea that uncertainty, it can be negative. Certainly, we think of that often, but also positive. And in practice on projects, I find we're more likely to find people, they're worried about those threats, those things that could go wrong. Yet you clearly help people see that uncertainty can present opportunities as well. And so as the risk doctor, how do you define risk, and how can a focus on the upside of risk help project managers and leaders?
Well, that's a great place to start, Andy. And I think it's really important because a lot of people think that risk management is really depressing. You know, you have a great project idea, and the first thing we do is go into a risk workshop, and we think about all the ways it could go horribly wrong, the ways that we could be late and upset the customer and so on. Why would I go to a risk workshop? I've got enough things to worry about without getting a whole list of things that might never happen, and I have to worry about those too. Well, of course, we do have to worry about those things. But this idea that risk includes upside or opportunity has become very popular and very prominent in the last 10 years. And I think it's a really important insight. You ask how I define risk, and I start with 3 simple words. My definition of risk is this. Risk is uncertainty that matters. You see, all risks are uncertain, but not all uncertainties are risks. A risk is something that may or may never happen. It may never happen in the future. The important thing is that there are millions of uncertainties in the world, but we don't have to put them all in our risk register. We don't have to care about them all or try and manage them all. There's only a subset that we're interested in. But which subset? What we want to know is which are the uncertainties that matter. And in projects and in business, we define the things that matter because they could affect our objectives. So here we get the link between risk and objectives. A risk is something that may never happen in the future. It's uncertain. But if it does happen, it matters because it could affect our objectives. Well, that's fine. The next question is, what kind of uncertainties really matter to us? Well, of course, we're concerned about things that may happen in the future, which, if they did happen, would delay us, or would cost us extra money, or would upset the customer, or destroy performance. And those are the threats, those are the bad uncertainties, which we need to look for, see coming, and try and position ourselves to do something about, to avoid them or to minimize them. But there's a whole other category of uncertainties which also matter. These are the uncertainties that we might call good luck, that we might call things in the future that might happen, but if they did happen, they would save us time, they would save us money, they would enhance performance, they would delight the customer. And if you take that broader view of risk, I think it's really helpful, it's really important. You ask, how does this help project managers, project leaders, and project teams? If we take this broader view of risk as uncertainty that matters with either a positive or a negative impact, then we're offering a process where we can scan the future. I call risk management a forward-looking radar. It scans the future to say, well, what's out there? What's coming my way? And of course, we need to see the potentially bad things that could delay us and cost us money and destroy performance and try not to bump into those. But we also can look ahead to see the things that could help us to work faster, smarter, cheaper, and steer towards those. Now, if you're a project manager and I come to you and I say, here's a simple process that you can use to avoid the bad things, minimize your problems, and at the same time, you can capture some good things and maximize your benefits. Well, wouldn't you want a process like that?
Absolutely.
I think we all would.
Right.
And that's what this broader view of risk management offers. And the interesting thing is, it's not just PMI. There's an ISO standard which came out last year, ISO 31000. There are other risk management standards. They've all adopted this much broader approach, which says, let's manage the uncertainties that matter, whether they're potentially bad and could produce problems, or potentially good and could produce benefits. Let's manage both of those in an integrated way. I think it's the way of the future. It's the way that really delivers the maximum benefit to a project or an organization.
You know, David, I love your picture of the forward-looking radar because it just makes sense. Would a pilot say, oh, there's a storm cloud, there's a storm cloud? No, they wouldn't look at just the danger, right? They would actually look for what's the routing that I could, you know, most efficiently get us to the location. So I just love the way you turn it into pictures and you boil it down simply. And in fact, I've personally benefited from your writing on, for example, risk attitudes, which I recall you defining somewhere along the lines of our chosen responses to this uncertainty that matters, but influenced by perception. And if I could trend my own risk attitude over the years, I could unquestionably see this progression from being highly risk averse. For me, it was right when I got out of college and first into the business world, to becoming more risk tolerant as I got further into management, and at least in some cases, more welcoming of uncertainty as I've been an entrepreneur for the last decade. Now, some of this might just be the benefit of experience, such as Mark Twain's quote, hey, I've been through some terrible things in my life, some of which actually happened, right? But regardless of where listeners find themselves on the risk spectrum, what are some of the key factors that influence our risk attitudes? And what advice do you have for those who want to become more welcoming of uncertainty but are struggling to do so?
That's another great question, Andy. I think a lot of people think of risk management as being a process. It's about systems and tools and techniques. And of course, it isn't. Really, risk management is about people. People manage risk. People assess risk. People determine appropriate responses.
Right.
And it's really important that we get this people side and build that into our whole approach to managing risk. And it's not difficult to do. But I think what's really interesting is what you said about your own personal experience over time. You know, you said you started off being quite cautious as a younger person, and now you're a bit more adventurous as an older person.
Right.
And you also said, in some circumstances. And of course, I think that just shows us a couple of things. One is that risk attitudes aren't constant. They vary, but they not only vary with time, whether that be with experience or age, but they also vary with the situation. And in some situations, it's right to be cautious and careful. And in other situations, we need to step out and try something completely different. So I think it's important for us to recognize that risk attitudes are not just fixed. I am the way I am, just take me or leave me. But actually, we can do something about that. Now, let's first of all think about what drives us to hold a particular risk attitude. And in that definition that you quoted, the most important part, I think, is the last part. So a risk attitude is a chosen response to uncertainty that matters, driven by perception. Now, perception is how you see the risk. And we see risks, we all see risks in different ways. And in my work, I've tried to clarify the things that influence how we look at uncertainty that matters, because everybody sees it differently. And I think there are three different strands of or groups of influences which we can distinguish, which we can separate out. Now, in reality, these things all kind of mix up together and they interact with each other, but we can tease them out to look at them separately and try and understand how they work. I call this the triple strand model. So the first strand is the conscious things, the things that we can measure, the things that we can scale on a metric of some sort. We might look at how likely the uncertainty is, what its potential impact is. We might do some kind of weighted decision tree. We might do some scenario planning. And all of our conscious assessments of the situation will help us to understand how we ought to respond to the risk. But that's only one of the strands. The second important strand is our subconscious, the things that happen in the back of our heads that we can't see, that perhaps we're maybe even unaware of.
Right.
Now, that includes our previous experience, it includes our upbringing, it includes our preferences, it includes a whole set of biases of things that we're perhaps not aware of. It includes the influence of other people. There's a whole set of unconscious biases. We call these heuristics or cognitive biases, and they influence our perception. And then there's a third strand, which in England, you know, we don't talk about this, but it's called emotions. You know, you know, British people don't have emotions. Right. You know, we're stiff upper lip and salute the Queen, all that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
A load of garbage. Of course we have emotions, but we don't take them to work, do we? Well, that's garbage too. You know, British people take their emotions to work. We just suppress them a little bit. But these emotions are going to influence how we feel about uncertainty. So am I tired? Am I cross? Am I upset? Am I happy? Am I relaxed? These different sort of visceral gut level things also influence how we feel about the uncertainty. Now, the important thing is to recognize that the conscious, the subconscious, and the emotional all interact together because we are whole people. So I can't separate out my mental processes and say, I'm just going to take a rational, dispassionate assessment of risk based on probability and impact and then decide what to do.
Right.
Because I bring my whole subconscious person with me, and I've got my whole set of emotions as well. Mm. And when we talk about what influences perception, it's a fairly complex challenge. The good thing is that we can see what's happening inside by what comes out. So attitudes shape behavior, and behavior actually forms culture, ABC, attitudes, behavior, culture.
That's good.
And if we're interested in how we behave towards risk, then, which comes from our attitudes, we can see that and moderate that by going back to that definition of risk attitudes, not the last word this time, but the first word. It's a chosen response to uncertainty that matters, driven by perception. And the key insight in my work in risk attitudes is you can choose. You're not a victim of your circumstances or your background or your emotions. With the application of emotional intelligence, we can choose which risk attitude is appropriate. So I can say, you know, naturally I'm a cautious person. In this situation, I need to just step up to the plate and be a bit more adventurous. So I'll choose that. I'll act that out. I'll become more risk-seeking in this situation and learn how to take appropriate levels of risk safely. And that's the goal for each one of us in our individual lives, in our projects, in our businesses, to take the right level of risk, but to take that safely and appropriately. That's the challenge.
You know, it's been said before that one of the best antidotes for anxiety is action. So instead of just worrying about it, is thinking it through this way and then choosing. And so it's taking some action. I like that. And yeah, and another thing that came to mind, David, was one of my mentors said, and this actually helped me as I kind of progressed with my tolerance of risk. He said, you know, Andy, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. So stop worrying about making mistakes. Just remember, it's better to shoot yourself in the foot than the head.
Excellent. A great quote.
And I think that appropriate risk safely kind of captures it in a much better way.
And that's what we've seen in the financial crisis recently is people took inappropriate risks and they took them not safely.
Yes.
And we ended up with having a major disaster. So.
Yeah. And, you know, whether you're a financial manager, whether you're a project manager, often we're faced with the question, what are your top risks? And we have to be able to answer that. And when I see project teams managing risk, they often answer it using the traditional two-dimensional probability impact matrix. And it certainly seems better than having no ranking structure at all. for the sake of those who are listening and maybe they're not familiar with that two-dimensional approach, how would you briefly describe that to them, David? And what are some additional characteristics of risk that could help them answer the question, what are our top risks?
Well, I think the way I approach this is always to go back to first principles, and everything comes out for me from that three-word definition of risk as uncertainty that matters. Because we can ask two questions out of that. So how uncertain is it, and how much does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the probability impact matrix comes from. Probability is a measure of uncertainty. Is this thing going to happen or not? How uncertain is it? And impact is a measure of how much it matters. How much could it affect our objectives? Will it delay me? If so, will it delay me by 1 day, 1 week, 1 year? Does it affect my budget by $1, $100, $1 million? So that impact scale is telling you how much it matters, and the probability scale is telling you how uncertain it is. There's a 1% chance of this happening, or a 20% chance, or a 65% chance. So we've got two dimensions of assessment. Now, what's important is that for a risk to be significant, an uncertainty that matters, that we want to manage, it has to register in both of those dimensions. So you could have something which has potentially a very significant impact, but it's never going to happen. Well, then I don't care about it.
Yeah.
Or you could have something that has a huge probability, is a 90% chance of this happening. It just doesn't matter. So I don't care about it. What the idea of the probability impact matrix is that it plots those two together to say, you know what, this really could happen. And if it does happen, it really could matter. That's something I need to prioritize. But I think the probability impact matrix, it's a good start, as you say. But let me suggest to you four other characteristics which we need to take account of. And I'll just be brief about this. The first is proximity. So proximity means, when might the risk happen? You know, a risk that could happen tomorrow, we really ought to prioritize that above a risk that could happen next week or next year.
Yes.
So proximity, how close is it? A second factor might be urgency. So when do I have to do something? You know, if I have to act today in order to address the risk, that's more important than a risk where I could think about it for another week or another month. So proximity, how close is the risk itself? And urgency, how quickly do I need to act?
Mm-hmm.
Two other things are quite interesting. One is manageability. So can I do something about it?
All right.
It's all very well saying, you know, here's the risk and we really need to do something. But if it's unmanageable, well, then, you know, we need to think differently. And the fourth one, you might not have heard this word. It's the word propinquity.
How much it has to do with me, is it, or something like that?
Exactly that. It's a type of closeness. Proximity is close in time. Propinquity is close to me.
Ah.
So how much does it matter to me? You know, if your project's in trouble, I'm sorry for you. Yeah. My project's in trouble, it really matters.
Right.
So those four extra factors, probability and impact, but also proximity, when might the risk happen? Urgency, how fast do I have to act? Manageability, how easy is it for me to do something? And propinquity, how much do I care about it? Those are other things that we need to put in play when we're prioritizing our risks.
Yeah, I heard it said, a recession is when your neighbor loses his job. A depression is when you lose your job, right?
That's true, yes.
And so we would look at those risks as, well, this is maybe a risk for the industry, but maybe not as much for us. But this is a clear risk for us as an organization, and so we would rate that different. The challenge is, the more variables you get is, how do you turn that into charts and ways to communicate it, right? And so I can think of ways to get three variables, but four and five and six makes it more difficult, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's why people just fall back on this probability impact matrix to say, well, you know, two on a two-dimensional grid, I can plot that easily.
Yeah.
Three, you know, do I have to produce a cube or some 3D chart?
Right.
Well, of course, a bubble diagram, a bubble chart will give you three dimensions.
Yes.
But four or more, that's really tough.
Yeah.
And so then what you have to do is a multivariate ranking. You first rank on probability and impact. You pick out your red risks. Then you get the red risks and you rank those by urgency or by proximity, and you get the ones that are the red risks that are close that I have to deal with now, and then you look at the red risks that are going to happen now that I have to deal with tomorrow, which are also high propinquity and highly manageable. So you do this in an order, and eventually you kind of filter them out. You have a range of different level screens, and ultimately the ones that you have to do straight away drop out at the bottom.
I like that. I'm going to have to read more on that one.
Well, make sure to check out the links in the show notes for David's books and his website. And a quick note, enrollment for our Leadership Fast Track program is officially open. The program, it's designed for high performers and high potentials in your organization. There are significant discounts and extras such as free e-learning and free premium podcast subscriptions for those who join during the early bird registration timeframe. So make sure to check out the show notes for a link to a program brochure and a narrated overview of the program. I would love to work with you in the Leadership Fast Track program. Well, join me in the next episode where Dr. David Hilson and I talk about how do you take the next step with risk management in your organization. And for my premium subscribers, your additional coaching episode will be published with the second portion of the interview. Well, thank you all for joining us for this episode of the People and Projects Podcast. Have yourself a great week.
As recognized by his peer. I still have trouble with them. As recognized by his peers.
It's the things where...
Are you there, Dave?
No, I just lost the call. I've got end call.
Is that right?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still on. You know what? Actually, I had a weird thing happen on this end as well. An indication that our first part of our interview didn't get recorded. And I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I think it's rather ironic that it was with the risk guy. That I like your picture of. I'm getting a lot of feedback there for a second. I wonder if can you hear that feedback, David?
No, it's very clear here.
Yeah, when I'm speaking out, I wonder, is it going through speakers on your side?
Yes, it is.
I wonder.
Do you want to just switch to a microphone?
Yeah, let's try this. Because when you're talking, it comes through no problem. When I'm speaking here, I'm getting the feedback of my voice. So let's try that. Ah, perfect. Yeah, it's could you sing a song for me? No, you don't have to sing a song. But, yeah, your voice is very light. It's definitely a quieter line though. But and I promise we won't start over.
I have no idea what I'd say the third time.
Yeah. Well, actually, it somehow was even better the second time, I have to tell you.